Hello and welcome to the Motor Racing Passion Podcast, brought to you by Breakthrough Health and Wellness. I'm Luke Blattman, and I've got Adam Blattman and Daniel Blattman alongside me for this one. Brock Schaefer has put in his annual leave form for a week, so it's a Blattman-only episode this time. We're going to discuss the Speed Series opening two rounds of 2022 at Simmons Plains and Phillip Island. So the Speed Series is a new term for this year. Basically, it's the show that features categories managed by the Australian Racing Group, namely TCR Australia, the S5000 Open Wheelers, Trans Ams, and the Historic Touring Car Masters category, and they'll be featuring at most, if not all, of the Speed Series events, along with the Australian GT Championship that ARG co-manages. Adam, what have you thought of the first two rounds so far?
It's been very interesting. There's been lots of action throughout the categories. Obviously started off down at Simmons Plains, and that was littered with safety cars across the weekend for it, which compromised some of the racing. Some two very heavy hits as well for GRM cars. But then moving to Phillip Island, it was good racing across all the different categories in there. It was good to see the GTs back running in Australia again for it there. S5000s had some good close racing, and TCR and Trans Am, and then you had your Radicals and the big bangers, the sport sedans, which are always great to see on the national stage.
How about you, Daniel?
I'm just excited to have some racing back. Like, to think that over the last 2 years, the Speed Series now, or the ARG categories, have pretty much put together only one or two events. To have two events back-to-back is so good. And I mean, I'm sure we'll get to it later, but I think the bang for your buck nature of what the Speed Series is putting on, quality and quantity of these categories, I haven't been able to get enough of it. I've been glued to both Simmons and Phillip Island. So now I'm really pumped to have it back on the screens.
The variety was one of the main things, I think, for me to come out of those first two meetings. Even if we just take the last event at Phillip Island, I mean, to sit back for a couple of hours and you see everything from TCR cars through to, obviously, you mentioned sports sedans and obviously Trans Ams, through to GT cars, through to open wheelers. I think actually the standout so far has been the TCR in terms of the role. I mean, Trans Am's been pretty exciting, but I think the TCR racing's been really, really good in the first two meetings.
Yeah, it has been good close racing door to door. A few panels rubbing, which is, goes back to the great other 2 litre series that have run, BTCC. I think that was thrown about a little bit in the coverage from the commentators in there talking about the panel rubbing. But I guess it's a formula that works. Yeah, it has BOP in it, but it's providing good close racing in there. And we've had a couple of different winners for it. So yeah, no, it is one of the standouts in there. But I think also the second GT race, that was a pretty good nail biter with the pros that were in there. The Trans Ams were pretty cutthroat for it, and the S5000s, I think everyone getting to grip with the new tyre in there, and some of the racing in there was pretty close and good to see there as well.
Yeah, TCR guys, I loved it. Basically, everyone put it all on the line. No one was protecting their machines. Saw Jay Hansen not backwards and coming forward at Simmons Plains, and friend of the show Brad Shields as well, sticking his nose up a few places that he might have regretted in hindsight. But I just loved watching those guys have a go. And to your point, Adam, too, yeah, no one's holding back. Everyone's having a dig, and I think that's what's making TCR so good to watch. And hopefully that continues. A few less safety cars and red flags is what we experienced, but as I think Phillip Island showed last weekend, that they've got the right recipe to deliver some kind of wheel-to-wheel action for the year ahead.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I went back and had a look, because everyone was talking about the safety cars from Simmons Plains, and going back to last year's one, it was actually the same amount of safety cars throughout the whole weekend. But I think the difference was this year was there was multiple cars in it, and it took a lot longer to get the cars off, which meant there was more laps behind safety cars. So the races were cut short quite a lot because of that, which is unfortunate because, you know, Simmons does provide some good racing in there.
There was a lot of criticism leveled at basically the whole program after Simmons' planes due to the amount of safety cars and the red flags. But I mean, any of the accidents that happened, I mean, they're going to be safety cars and red flags in any category in modern motorsport, basically. It's just, unfortunately, it was just bad luck in many ways.
Yeah, I'm with you because, and don't get me wrong, like, I, as much as anyone, doesn't want to watch safety cars on a show, but on that little boring, like Simmons planes, it is, you know, it's a necessary evil, so to speak. And I think a few of the people speaking out about it had a bit of an axe to grind and were almost using that to prove a point. So, yeah, I don't give that much oxygen, to be honest. The one thing and to your point, Adam, that is on the agenda is how to reduce those recovery times. And I think Motorsport Australia now's looked at having a permanent recovery team or a traveling recovery team or something to that effect, to, you know, which should hopefully expedite that process. But, you know, as we've seen, different accidents, cars losing wheels on the last corner of Phillip Island, like each scenario, retrieving cars brings up a slight, yeah, unique situation, but I think there was a marked improvement.
Yeah, well, you could see what they tried to do on the Sunday where I think it was in the Trans Am accident at the third race. They just moved all the cars off into that where they used the bikes, that little section there, and just got the race going and then picked them all up at the end of the race. I think the other long one was the S5000, which was down at the hairpin where it kept bottoming out on the transition on the access road there. So I think that's one of the things with their new team that should alleviate it moving forward. But yeah, I don't think you can fully put it onto the drivers. They're trying their hardest out there to move up as many spots as possible. So you're going to have a crack. It's not a procession that you see in some other mainstream national categories that just follow the leader and don't bother making a pass. You want them to go down there. Unfortunately, sometimes that does lead into contact and, repair bills for cars and everything. So they have to be smart about doing it. But motor racing isn't cheap when you go into that cutthroat racing.
After Simmons' planes, you couldn't have got more of a sort of an opposite race meeting in terms of stoppages when it came to Phillip Island. Well, there was a time shortened race or two in the program, but for the most part, the races were quite flowing and not a lot of safety cars and very, very exciting.
I'll give a shout out to that, the second GT race. That one was high quality in terms of fairly clean, no major stoppages, actually allowed these strategies to play out. So I think, that Sunday was a real good example of, you know, what the Speed Series categories have to offer and that you can race hard and, you know, relatively clean. So obviously there was a couple safety cars in the TCRs and S5000s there. S5000 ones, I think, hurt the most because there was just such a small entry. But but still, they were good quality races, and you actually allowed the race to flow and some good racing to actually occur.
For all the complaints about the S5000 grid size and the amount of sort of safety cars they've been having, which also sort of dates back to Bathurst in their final round last year, I mean, obviously you can't shy away from the grid size. But I thought their racing has been great.
Well, I think it's because the spread of the field. Like, you've obviously got Joey Mawson, who's got a lot of open wheeler experience overseas. Jimmy Golden, who's done a lot of bulk of the testing with GRM now, and then, you know, Tim Macro has been in there, pretty accomplished in Australia at the front there. Those three are pretty good, and then you've got the middle pack. And the rest of them, where they're all fairly close together in time. So there's a bit of a battle going on the whole way through, even for the field size, which I guess doesn't make you think too much of the field size until you actually see the results page and you go, oh, there's only 9 cars, but, you know, it was quite close.
I agree that, especially that top half of that field, you know, the macro, his win in the second race was really, really good quality. And that Purdy obviously had a rough weekend in the end, but some of those moves he stuck down in a Honda corner was incredible. So the intensity of the race is right up there. I agree with that. It's but it does kind of, you know, we just need a bit more depth in that field for it to really make that step up as a, you know, like a leading category in Australia, because it's definitely got the potential. And those guys racing at the front are giving it 10 tenths. Mm. But yeah, and also Cooper Webster, watched him now for like last season when he jumped into it too, and he's super impressive as well. So there's some great talent. But one thing I think we need in that category is just some continuity. We've got those 4 or 5 drivers that turn up round after round, but then there's a kind of like a moving feast of drivers around it, which just makes it hard to gain a bit of traction.
Yeah, and I think part of that is what's come out in the news as well. Barry Rogers has come out and spoke about the super license system and the points and how they're accrued to it, and said that, you know, S5000 should be getting more allotment than what they've got, so it's a good viable option for people to come race them as well. And that's going to help bolster up, because, you know, I think rumors around that it is about 200-250k a season to do S5000 compared to, say, like a Super 2 ride, which is, you know, anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million, depending on the deal and team you get. So for a young up-and-coming star to drive one of those things, you can do two or three seasons for one season in Super 2. So I think if that gets a leg up there, I think that gives a good option for young people coming through to cut their teeth, and maybe you get a person there for 2 or 3 years before they step up potentially.
I get the point Barry Rogers was making, totally, about the super license points, but how many of the top supercar teams are going to hire drivers straight out of S5000, like straight into a supercar's main series seat? I would have thought all the front-running teams would probably want a driver to do some Super 2.
I think the front-running teams would. They got their pathway programs and everything they want to do. So, that, you know, I'm looking at like a 888 or a DJR or a Walkinshaw, maybe even a Tickford from there. But I think like a potentially an Erebus, maybe Brad Jones as well. I think they would look at someone who can drive one of those and go, hey, they're driving that pretty good of a thing, let's give them a go. Whether that might be in Super 2, I don't think you, unless they're a outstanding superstar that just cleans up everything and fits into a supercar and drives it properly. I think those days are gone where you pluck someone out of, say, like a Formula Holden and stick them into a supercar in the 90s and off they go. I think, yeah, those days are past, but I think it's more so trying to get people in to build their skill set to set them up for the future while helping the category.
Well, yeah, no, for sure. But the sort of Barry Ryan's point was saying that the way the super license points work to be able to get your license to compete in the Supercars Championship, he was saying the way they're written, it basically made it that, yeah, you have to go through Super 2. I guess the point I'm trying to make is, like, if the top teams aren't going to hire anyone who hasn't gone through Super 2 anyway, then why does it really matter if S5000 doesn't offer enough super license points? Like, say, Joey Mawson, I think we all agree he could cut it in the Supercars Championship as is. But someone like, if 888 were interested in him, I'm sure they'd still want him to do a season or so of Super 2, irrespective of super license points at the moment.
Luke, you're right in terms of they are probably going to look to the, you know, the leading drivers from Super 2. But my issue with it is that it's orchestrated that you can only choose from Super 2, which seems like a, you know, artificially induced system. And I think what happens then is you see drivers think the only way to get to, if they want to be a silhouette touring car proxy driver in Australia, that you have to go and buy a Super 3 car, go through Super 3, feed into Super 2 to get into V8 Supercar. Whereas, do you know what I mean, that then takes people out of all these other categories. So you never know. Someone might do a bit of S5000, jump into Super 2 and then go to supercars. But at least they're, do you know what I mean? They're accruing these points along the way. Because really, the whole thing it should be about is safety. And do you know what I mean? Skill development, etc. Driving an S5000 is harder than driving a Super 2 car. The speeds, the power, all those things. So taking the artificial commercial nature out of it, and that, like, I think that's what really winds me up, and just do it on its merits and let teams make their decisions and whatever it be, at least people can make their own minds. Whereas at the moment, it's kind of forcing people's hands in that nature, which, I don't think's right.
All right, a couple of quick fire thoughts I had from the first two rounds. I'll start with this one. The camera position they used in the TV coverage of the hay shed, I thought was really, really good. Did you guys notice that?
Looking on the entry or the exit coming into Lukey?
The sort of the entry.
The outside Lukey. Of it.
On the, yeah.
They'd sort of had the camera in the one spot for probably the last 30 years, but they seem to just move it a bit closer to the right hander, and you could really see the angle of the cars changed as they came out of the right and then went into the left to head up over Lukey Heights. That for some reason just really I really noticed that the first time I saw it.
Well, I think it was a bit closer to the ground as well. It may have not been up.
Yes, it was
scaffolding. So I think that probably gave it a bit more as well. But yeah, no, that was a good one. And that angle caught some good passing and some good saves from some of the drivers coming through there too.
Yeah, just the general attitudes of the cars. I thought it really, really picked up on it. How did we think James Moffat was in commentary at Simmons Plains? I thought he was quite good.
Yeah, I enjoyed his contributions to the, and obviously the circumstances weren't ideal of why he was in there, and credit him for remaining relatively calm throughout those exchanges. But yeah, no, he added a lot to the broadcast, and having that driver's perspective was really good. And equally to that, having Caruso in the box for the GT cars in Phillip Island races, that was really good too.
And Thomas Randall in the S5000 as well.
Because I think it's a tough thing, to find a driver that can commentate but also explain things well is a pretty difficult trait to find in everyone, because you see it on some of the supercar broadcasts they bring in, or they used to bring in drivers in to commentate, and not all of them were too flash at it. They did an all right job for what they are, being their main gig being a driver, not a commentator. But I think, yeah, both Caruso, Randall and Moffat, held themselves pretty good in doing what they did.
James is obviously following after his father, Alan, in being quite good behind the microphone as well as in the car.
So it just took me back to some Bathurst 1998 with Moff there.
We just need some of Alan's Moffisms brought into it. If they ever went to Lakeside, we need James Moffat to describe a track with a bit of dipsy doodling in the in the topography of the track. Something that's grown on me over the first two rounds have been the 2022 style Valvoline colour scheme.
It looks good. For that, it kind of mirrors what they're doing around the world. It kind of matches what Kyle Larson, when he's running his Hendrick NASCAR, kind of mirrors that same livery that they're kind of doing over there. Maybe that's a worldwide branding, but yeah, it looks good. But I'd like them to go back to the mid-90s Valvoline paint schemes. I think that's where Valvoline sits at.
When I first saw when they did the lineup on Simmons Plains of all the GRM Valvoline cars for this year, I originally looked at it and I was wondering, are they sponsored by STP now? Or because it reminded me of like one of the Granatelli STP Indy cars from the 60s, or latterly like Roberto Guerrero's 1987 Indy 500 Indy car. So originally I was like, oh, are they Valvoline colours? But I got to say, they by the end of Simmons Plains, they've grown on me, and I think they look really good, especially on Aaron Cameron's Peugeot. It just, yeah, I think it comes up quite good.
That one really stood out for me. The TCRs and the S5000, I thought those look really, really good. Distinctive, look sharp, professionally done. So it'll be interesting to see how theoretically some Valvoline Audis look at the 12-hour.
One thing I will say with James Golding's Valvoline S5000, they need to write the 31 in black or something, or red on the nose. At the moment, he's just got it. It's like a white. It's a black outline, but it's white, and the background of that part of the nose is white. But you touched on something I was going to ask, Adam. So what would be your favourite Valvoline livery of all time?
Well, I'm not too biased at all on this, but I'll have to say Alan Gross's Pontiac Grand Prix stock car is the best Valvoline livery I've ever seen.
Yes, he's one from the 91-92 season that he used particularly on the Gold Coast in 92.
That's the one. It would have to be one of the best ones ever produced.
What about you, Daniel?
So I've got a dead heat that I can't split. First one's Robbie Gordon's Walker IndyCar.
Yeah.
In the mid-90s. They all kind of stick together pretty good. No, I don't want it. I don't want to split them. They are all worthy. So maybe I've got a wider tie than this one. And then equally, Paul Radisich's Valvoline Ford Mondeo from the British Touring Car Championship.
Mm.
That was very smooth as well.
Yeah.
So, two of the greats, Robbie Gordon and Paul Radisich.
Yeah. I love that mid-90s Valvoline colour scheme, which ironically Gary Rogers Motorsport never used on their Valvoline cars of the 90s. The only time they did end up using it was on the S5000 test car in 2019. But the swooping colours along the side that, the British Touring Car Mondeos had them in 95, 96. Mark Martin used it for a bit in the mid-90s. As you said, Robbie Gordon had that colour scheme in 95 and 96.
Well, I guess the honourable mention to the 1997 GRM Nissan Primera. Classic Valvoline livery.
It stood out.
It was a white car with
four Valvoline on the side. The Valvoline stood out on it, but there wasn't much else to it. That disappointed me. The 96 Honda Accord and the 97 Primera, I was disappointed they left them plain white.
If that Honda didn't almost destroy it. Almost destroy itself at Lakeside. Yeah, no one would remember that livery.
Mm. Did it in 96 when he got into a tangle with Paul Morris, I think.
That was an accident and a half.
Yeah, and then 97 he went off at Hungry Corner and got a bit of air in the first round before he switched to the Primera for round two.
But you're probably forgetting the closest thing they got was 95 in the Alpha. It wasn't a full swooping livery, but it was on the rear quarter and then along the sills. That was the closest it got for Valvoline.
And all right, this is my sort of little controversial thing I thought of while watching the first round, actually, at Simmons Plains. There are a couple of little trip-ups into the first corner in a couple of the races. And it got me thinking, and to be honest, I haven't thought this in the 27 odd years that they've been starting the races from that particular spot. But I was sitting there thinking, why don't they move the start line back to where it originally was, which was under the bridge, which is basically just coming out of turn two, what is turn two now. So they used to start there and turn one was the hairpin. But I was thinking if they started the races there, you'd have a long run up to turn one. You'd have quite an exciting braking duel into the hairpin. But I feel like the cars at the start of a race, they'd sort of funnel around there a lot better than they do the current turn one, where they seem to all trip up over each other. Thoughts?
Or do you have just a bigger accident?
Well, that was going to be potentially my thing of going, you've got a longer run to a hairpin, so you got a lot more people dive bombing, doing everything else to try and get in there. Is it just going to create another spot? Is it just the nature of the track where it's tight, regardless of whether it's where it is now or where it used to be?
Well, you got a bit less room. Like, for instance, some of those, like, guys were sort of ducking over the curb as far as they could, and whereas at the hairpin at Simmons Plains, basically you've got the tarmac leading up to it, and you've only got the tarmac. You can't climb over a curb. You can't really push anyone wide onto the grass or anything. And you'd have a little bit longer accelerating into the corners for people to get a little bit of space.
But then compared to this year, we don't see what happens in state racing down in Tassie for it there. So maybe some of our Tassie listeners, if you want to comment when it comes out, to let us know what happens for there. But how many other national categories or events over there has been the same amount of accidents in turn one, lap one?
It's a thought that has never occurred to me, and they've been starting in that spot since 1994 when they built the new pits there. I don't think it's ever occurred to me in all those years of even watching old races and then watching where they start now. There was just something triggered my brain. I think it was when Slade tripped Mawson up at the start of the S5000 race, because it just, the first corners always just seemed awkward, like cars trundling around and tripping.
Well, I guess it's a bit just the nature of the, I guess, well, depending on what you call turn one, turn two, whether turn one's the right over the crest and then into the left-handers turn two, depending on who you talk to, it could be all different in that. But I think it's because you're still turning over the crest to come down into the left-hander that you're kind of trying to do two things at once, so the car can get light, or you got people funneling down the inside and trying to converge and cut off, or not cut off, but block people potentially coming in to take the ideal line in there, that you are going to get that banging just because it's kind of going one direction and then it's quickly back to the left. For I think it's the old thing of you can't win a race in the first corner, but you can definitely lose it. So I think it's back onto the drivers to get through there cleanly.
Yeah, I just thought by the time they come down to the hairpin, they've sort of funneled into a single line and they've sort of spread out a little bit, whereas I thought that might have been a bit more exciting turn one, but it may not make any difference.
Well, you saw it in the Trans Am race down at Simmons Plains, where unfortunately under the yellow flag, where the Trans Am car ploughed into the back of another one, slowing down because they didn't see him or didn't see him slowing up quick enough, and had a bit of an accident there.
Well, next episode, I'll be campaigning for them to do away with the Honda hairpin at Phillip Island and bring back the original turn four.
What was the original turn four?
It runs on, you know, the escape road.
Yep.
Well, that's the original track. It ran up.
Oh, it goes down further to the embankment.
It runs up a bit closer to the lake, and then it's still a 180 degree sort of right hander, but it's less tight.
Yeah.
And then you know how sort of you come out of Honda hairpin and then sort of you go straight, then there's a bit of a jink to the right.
Yep.
Before you get to Siberia, well, that's jink to the right is sort of where the original track sort of went and rejoined into Siberia.
When did they change that? Obviously, when they got the MotoGP.
Yeah, when they built it for the 80. Well, when they rebuilt the track for the 1989 500cc Grand Prix Shortened the corner up there. And I think they changed MG corner a little bit. I think it used to run a little bit further down the hill and was a bit of a tighter corner, but I read somewhere once they were a little bit worried about the gearing of the 500s pulling out of there or something.
It's all right. Slip the clutch a little, get it back up in the rev range, you're fine.
For this one, I guess we'll concentrate a little bit more on TCR and S5000 because obviously they both kicked off in terms of Australia in 2019. Where do you think they are now? Are those two categories and ARG in general, are they where you thought they'd be from 2019 to now?
No, but I'll preface that by saying I don't know where else they could be with you know everything that's gone on in the last 2 years. So you think this would be their fourth season. So you'd feel like they're well established, where I still feel like they're a new or sophomore category trying to still establish itself on the Australian scene. But I think that's just reality of basically not racing for 2 years. So, do you know what I mean? It's kind of hard to judge them on that when they haven't been able to have a fair crack. There has been constant change with it as well. So I'm looking forward. I don't want to jinx anything for this year. But I think they're still trying to establish themselves as a motor racing circuit in Australia.
I probably think TCR is probably a bit stronger and planted than S5000. But I think it's what hurt S5000 was having, I guess, what's happened in the last 2 years. There was a lot of hype when it was coming in for it. But then, I guess, with everything that happened, it lost its bit of momentum for it there, whereas I think TCR's kind of stayed pretty stable and had, that level of interest that you've had more drivers come in over the last 2 years, regardless of whether ARG were tipping in some money to some or helping out others in other ways for it. But I think they've got a lot more room to grow, but I think TCR is a little bit ahead and a little bit better off than what S5000 is.
I think in many ways, I mean, this is the first proper serious season of S5000.
Mm.
They started very late. And a lot of fanfare. They started very well in at the end of 2019. Obviously, they flew out Barrichello for the start of it, and that was pretty good racing. And obviously, 2020 happened, and then 2021 they got going. But I mean, it was still, although they got their full season in because they're originally planning to do a summer series, it was still only half a year of racing in the first half of last year, with the big gap in the middle. So I think this is the first proper year really for S5000. And in that respect, I mean, is 9 cars that bad, given what's happened over the last couple of years?
It's hard because I think Formula 3 had some high points, but it was kind of remembered as having smaller fields. I think that's what's challenging now. You flip on to the S5000 races and you see 9 cars roll up. It's hard to not be a little bit underwhelmed just by the depth of the field. I agree that they have had everything against them. And I think we can't underestimate the fact of not having a marquee event at the Grand Prix as well for 2 seasons, because that's obviously where, they're big time to shine in terms of Australia's biggest open wheeler event, or actually the biggest event in the country. So I think that's contributed as well. Because in other situations, they haven't done themselves. Like Bathurst was another opportunity last year. That didn't work out great just in terms of how the race has unfolded. But then you throw into that as well, they've had 2 cancelled Bathurst International events where they would have run as well. So, on balance, they have been dealt a pretty rough card.
I think what probably harmed S5000 more was, because everyone always hears about the rich open wheel history in New Zealand, and with the border situation in New Zealand, I reckon we possibly could have got a few more New Zealand drivers out last year to drive if the border situation worked out both ways for them. So it might be interesting later on this year to see if any more New Zealand drivers come out. And then to your point, Daniel, there about not having the Grand Prix for it, I think if they put on a good show at the Grand Prix, it might give some of the F1 teams for their driving academy or something, it might open their eyes to go, hey, well, in the off season for F2, F3, and some of their other pathways, it might be, hey, send these guys down to Australia to do a couple of rounds for it, do the Tasman series, whatever, for it, and get a few more internationals down now that the borders are open. So I think that's probably might be a good pathway in for it.
Yeah, I think if this time next year we're still looking at 9, 10, 11 cars, then maybe there might be something a bit more to worry about. But I think for the moment, 9 cars, given what we've just talked about, I think 9 cars, you can tolerate it, given, you know, 9 cars makes the sound of 18. So I think that's okay. TCR, I got to admit, I'm quite surprised by generally how well it seems to be going. We loved our Super Tourers in the 90s, and you know, TCR's a it's a bit different, but in some ways it's a bit of a spiritual successor. But when they originally announced the TCR series for 2019, I was a bit skeptical originally at the start, wondering if there was really a place for it. It surprised me originally how many cars showed up in 2019. I mean, to have 21 starters at Phillip Island last weekend was great, and it was a quality 21 car grid. Given they effectively haven't raced for 2 years in terms of a full season.
Yeah, I agree that in terms of the overall growth. I don't want to say it's grown, but it's really maintained its quality, which is an achievement itself, because as everyone's aware, when it started, a fair number of cars were underwritten by the owners and invested in to get it up and running. So in season 4, as you said before, that we now have 21 cars and we've got some real quality from top to bottom, whether it be youngsters, experienced hands, there's front wheel drive specialists. It's very good, and yeah, the quality of the racing and the presentation of the racing is really positive. So we just need to get them a 500 kilometer endurance race in 2023, and then I think we'll be really motoring with that category.
Well, I think on that, like not knowing what happened to the cars that ARG owned that weren't snapped up by people, but if they're still in the country, there's a good potential for potentially 26-27 cars, because I think MPC, I think probably got another one, maybe two Audis that haven't run. There's the two Subarus that Kelly's run. I think Mildon Motorsport may still have them, may not. There's the Astras that the Kelly's run as well. And then I think one of Jason Bright, the cars that Jason Bright ran, the V-dubs, I think one got moved on, but there's maybe another one out there as well. So there's potential for more cars out there if people snap them up and take them out. And I think there's another Hyundai, Michael King, who had a Hyundai. He was supposed to run last year. He hasn't come out and run this year yet. But yeah, so there's a good potential that the field could swell to near 30, which will be a fantastic sight, I think.
Well, there was a third wall Honda.
Yes, yeah, did forget about that one, yeah. Because what do they get in the wall TCR? Do they get 30 or where are they at?
Yeah, 30-odd. I haven't seen the entry list for this year. But yeah, full grids anyway. We just need someone to import a Lincoln Co. to the Australian series, and then I'll be very happy. Well, that or a Lada.
Well, you look at the other in there, like there was the Sayat that was raced for one race meeting. Toyota's developing their one in Argentina, so maybe the Bates, Neil Bates Motorsport. So there's a few other makes that are out there that haven't been run here. So, you know, there's a good potential to bring him in and import him and run him.
It was it's a pity Chaz Mostert didn't come back to do the series this year, but I guess, you know, we swapped him out and swapped Will Brown in. I was glad Brown and Coulthard didn't sort of come in at Simmons Plains and dominate. But by the same token, I thought it was a great race with them two at the front at Phillip Island. At the end of the day, they're really good drivers, and they should be up the front, given they've one's competing in supercars, one's just come from supercars. They should be the two at the front fighting it out. But I'm glad they didn't just waltz in at Simmons Plains and walk off with it.
To coin a phrase, an overused terrible phrase, but that was pressure motor racing at the end of race three in Phillip Island. That was high quality. And at the rate that Will Brown closed in on Coulthard, I'm actually amazed he didn't get the job done, but it was great driving from the two of them. So that was really good. But to your point, Luke, they both struggled like massively. You think Will Brown's for lack of a better word, the defending champion of this series. And he really struggled down in Simmons Plains, and same for Coulthard, but to their credit, they kept chipping away and obviously used the reverse grid race to their advantage. And it was good to see them, that they worked for it. And but there's obviously some good bunch of drivers all pushing them along as well.
Do you think TCR suffers from the super touring syndrome in Australia in terms of an image?
Ooh.
Probably when it first
I think it does.
I think when it first got announced for the first season, it drew up a lot of people in the arena, maybe some in media, maybe some in other racing series, to say, here we go again. This is just super touring versus V8 supercars again. There's no place for that sort of racing in Australia because everyone just wants V8s. But, you know, if you go do the market research in and around 2019, the hot hatch market was one of the best selling markets compared to V8 sedans. And unfortunately, people buying buying with their hard earned cash, they're buying hot hatches and not V8 Falcons and Commodores. And hence, they're not here at the moment, as much as supercars kind of went away from that production racing. People are interested. Are they motorsport fans buying those cars? Some maybe, some may not. But I think when it first got announced, it did have that stigma back around for that battle in the, I guess, mid to late 90s for it. But I think now it's kind of making its own place in Australia, trying to say, well, we're not going to be the elite touring car class in Australia, but we're here. We provide this racing, and it is different because it is front-wheel drive racing compared to rear-wheel drive. So I think it's evolved in its 4 years or whatever it's been.
Yeah, I don't know, because it's 20 years now since Super Touring kind of wound up in 2001 here in Australia. And so it's a fair whack of time. So I don't know if it's a Super Touring hangover or just there's too much focus in this country on having one outlet for motor racing. And I say that in terms of it's why the open wheel struggle has been so disappointing. It's like, I don't think it's really specific to 2-litre front wheel drive cars. I think it's just everyone's struggling with the concept that there's more to motorsport than just one category. I think that's what it's fighting, you know, establishing itself as a destination category in the eyes of spectators or consumers, I should say. But to that point as well, looking at the crowd at Phillip Island on the weekend, that was fairly decent. So I think there is starting to be some cut through. Not for a second am I suggesting it will be the dominant and most popular, but I think we are seeing, you know, bit of movement in terms of getting spectators back out to motor racing events that aren't those ugly, authoritarian, promoted and run categories. So,
well, I think going back to 20 years ago, I think Vesco did did what they needed to do to cement them as the only option for racing in Australia, and that's how they hit it hard back then, and you know, put it in that mind that Australia is V8 supercars.
I think there's an element of the fan base that still views TCR in the with a memory to super touring, but there'd also be sort of newer fans to the sport who enjoy V8 supercars and have got no problem with TCR coming along. I mean, fans probably the age we were in 1997, 1998, and we love super tourers. So there's definitely an element of the fan base out there that I think views TCR with the same way that they were, I guess, encouraged to view super tourers by supercars in the late 90s. But I will say I've got a friend who's, I mean, for example, he's been to every Supercars 1000 since it was instituted in 97. And when I saw him after last year's Repco 1000, you know, he said what a good time he had up there, but he also was going on about how awesome the TCR cars were. And I mean, this is a guy who loves his V8s, has been a big supporter of V8s. And yeah, he was saying how good TCR was to watch, particularly across the top of the mountain. So I think that's an encouraging sign going forward. What about ARG in general from 2019 to now as a category manager and running their categories and where they've positioned themselves?
They've diversified. They've covered their bases with it, going from, you know, the S5000 TCR initially, then starting the Trans Am was the third one that they brought on with it, and then going to acquiring, was it TCM next, and then they got the rights for GT? Is that the timeline?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Like, if you look, they kind of covered all their bases for it. Like, it would seem before the TLA supercars deal that they were a part of, that they're kind of bridging themselves up to go on their own and have events and kind of cover all the basis needs for where they need and plug gaps with other national categories, which they're kind of doing now with the Speed Series with it. So I think they've got a wide range. How they work into their events and obviously other ones, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, I guess, next year once they get a good solid running this year under their belt. But yeah, like, they've got a good diverse range of categories in there, a bit for everyone.
It's interesting. I know they don't have a obviously a complete ownership of supercars. They've just got a portion of it. But how sort of separate the Speed Series is this year from the Supercars Championship? There's not a lot of. I mean, some of the ARG categories are on the Supercars support bill, but I mean, for instance, TCR's not. And you've got a very distinct difference where supercars are shown on Channel 7. You've got the Speed Series exclusive to Stan Sport, and there'll be no crossover in that department.
What about when the S5000s go to Darwin?
Oh yeah, no. They'll be on Channel 7. But that's not going to be promoted as a Speed Series event.
No,
that's just going to be another S5000 Australian Drivers Championship round.
Yeah,
at that event, I doubt you'll hear much talk of the Speed Series on that broadcast.
But yeah, I'm just impressed. Proud they've stuck with it. Like, do you know what I mean? It wasn't just a short term, you know, swoop in and then swoop out kind of thing, expecting super fast returns. So I've been pretty impressed, and good to see they've really stuck with it, and doubled down. Their acquisition of the GT series, whether that was, well, it was now, it's probably 18 months ago. For me, that was a show of, you know, their long-term vision, because they're taking a category that was really struggling and made some really shrewd decisions to bring SRO in and really drive that forward. So, yeah, no, at this point, I can't fault them. And, you know, and they seem committed to maintaining TCR and S5000 and that whole group of categories, their own identity. They're not going to just get rolled into support categories for other series. They're actually, you know, they've identified that they've got their own unique brand, and they're going to back them to do that. So, yeah, no, I'm really thrilled to see how that's come together.
I guess that was the fear when they bought into supercars. You wondered, well, were they going to almost give up on their investment into all this in terms of TCRS 5000 and all that? But it just seems that's almost inspired them to basically separate them even more rather than just merge them all in together. All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment with some more chat on the Speed Series for 2022. Breakthrough Health and Wellness. The Breakthrough 60-Day Challenge combines a highly effective weight loss program and a high-end personal fitness experience without costly memberships. In a culture of flash workouts and going hard, Breakthrough have taken a more sustainable approach and developed the perfect program that will not only get you fit and healthy, but also help you shed stubborn weight that you thought was never going to budge. Breakthrough will offer new inspiration and goals that will lead to life changes you can easily maintain. Each week, Breakthrough offer interesting muscular endurance, strengthening and functional movement exercises with a training app that will rival any workout you have done at the gym. For more information, visit mybreakthrough.com.au. That's mybreakthru. And follow Breakthrough on Facebook and Instagram. All right, welcome back to the podcast. Now, the controversial Stan TV deal for the Speed Series in 2022, what do we think of it two rounds in?
Obviously, you know, the obvious challenge of people subscribing and obviously that taking a bit of investment is a potential barrier. But I think if you're in a position where you can gain the subscription, the quality of it is a definite step up. So, I can't fault it. Looking at last weekend, I think it was 12 hours of coverage over 2 days. Really well put together, great range of categories.
Quality's been, that's the one thing of the deal you can't complain about. You can have opinions on other aspects of it, but the actual, what you're seeing on the TV has been really, really good.
No, I agree with that. And I guess one of the good things about on Stan is you can go to the live action and you can, you know, rewind it back to the start. So if you come in, say, an hour after the coverage start, you can just go straight back to the start and watch what you want to watch back to it being live, or pretty much when the event finishes, you can go back and watch certain sections for the categories and stuff. But the quality and the cross-section of people they got on there hosting and commentating on there, I think it gels really well together. I think it's good for ARG for the deal that they were able to get for it. Kind of strengthens themselves in that. So, yeah, can't fault it so far.
I got to say, Matty White has never overly been my favourite commentator. But in terms of fronting these broadcasts, I mean, you can see what a professional he is. He's done a really good job. And it was a bit of a surprise when he got announced.
The big announcement for him, it kind of makes you wonder what else they got on the pipeline for themselves to come through, like signing him on for the Speed Series. Has he been signed on for any other sport on Stan so far, or do you reckon they're working on other things outside of motorsport for him to cover as well?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I've only ever watched motorsport on Stan so far. But I haven't heard of him popping up anywhere else in terms of sport. But I mean, he's not part of the Stan Sports coverage of the Australian Superbike Championship.
No.
Perhaps he's just exclusive to the Speed Series. In general, were you guys fans of the signing with Stan and the deal with Stan that they went with?
Fans probably a bit strong. I was quite, to be honest, I was quite happy with the Shen International live stream on Facebook and YouTube that we had 20, 2013, 2014, right up to, you know, 2020 or whatever, whenever it was that it phased into the SBS and Channel 7 broadcast. So on purely viewing terms, it didn't really make too much of a difference. From me, I think where the change comes in is the investment Stan are making into the categories or into the ownership, which, you know, the money hopefully is being reinvested into the categories and into the sport. And then I think that's where I see the potential, and that could really really pay dividends.
Yeah, I guess any time that anything goes from, you know, completely free to wear or free streaming, like it was with the Shannons, for it in 7+, for it to behind a paying subscription service, obviously that's not saying it's not a great thing, because it is, because obviously the investment that they're making, as you said, Daniel, and the money coming back into ARG, but everyone's seen the comments, some people saying about it going to a pay subscription and everything else like that for it. I guess the only thing would be is the non-ARG categories, seeing how they fit into the coverage. We saw, Sports Dan's have one race covered on the coverage, and then I think Formula Ford get a race on Saturday and a race on Sunday, I think, and I think the Radicals got one race broadcast as well for it. So it'll be interesting to see moving forward how the non-ARG categories, how they fit into it, because obviously on the previous iterations, whether it was 7+ or even back when it was just the Shannon's live stream for it, there was from go to o of all the categories, regardless of it was, they kind of got coverage of their session. So obviously Stan's deal is with ARG for it, but yeah, that's one thing. It'll be interesting to see how that goes through the rest of the year, how other support categories that are non-ARG fit into to the streaming thing.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the TV deal on face value, which is all I can go off. I think it's a crazy move. You know, TCR and that have lost basically 2 years of competition, and the last half of last year basically invisible, because there was no racing after May until they supported the Repco 1000. How do they expect people to, in many ways, pay for something they don't know about? Why would anyone but a diehard who knows about it sign up for Stan? I don't see how that does the sponsors you've got any good, because you're really limiting who's going to see the racing.
Let me answer a question with a question.
Yeah.
How much do you think the move to Stan has changed the ratings?
Maybe not much, but the potential eyeballs are severely limited.
Yeah.
Like if you're on free to air, you can potentially have just about anyone in Australia watch it. Potentially.
You could.
You could.
But
if by having it on
the Stan, chances of converting that, yeah.
Yeah, but I think there is no potential in now going to Stan. You've cut people off from it.
But I guess
I think it's the perception. They've worked out who their audience is. And like potential audiences are great, but I think sponsors care about who's actually watching. And that's where I think they've worked out that it's better to receive in and around $5 million a year rather than pay $5 million a year for coverage. And they know who their audience is, and you can tailor a product to your audience.
But have they given it the chance to get an audience? Because you haven't been on TV for 2 years properly.
No, but I think, you know, they had the 2019 experience, and I think you've also got experience from the Shannons and Nationals and the categories that ran on television through the previous iterations too, to get a feel.
Yeah, but they never got the chance to give the Channel 7 deal a proper go. that, you know, 2019 you're on SBS, which is a bit more limited than Channel 7, but you had two compromised years on Channel 7, and this was potentially your first sort of normal year since then, but they've just jumped straight to Stan. Yeah. In my way, you know, they almost should have been treating this year as sort of year one, like you were starting from scratch. Now, I know they've invested a lot of money over the last couple of years, but I would have thought you've almost got to start again, unfortunately, given what's happened in the last 2 years. But it seemed like they just wanted to try and get some money back on their investment, which may be too simplistic.
It could be that. And it'll be like, since they, not all the details were fully divulged, but it'd be interesting to know if any, not compensation, but assistance to the competitors are being given, whether that's you know, reduction in some entry fees or you know, contingency money, subsidizing of, you know, tires or fuel or, you know, things like that, whether that's being passed on as a part of that for $5 million a year, to see if that is filtering down to the categories under the ARG banner for it. Because I'm sure with the skill set and the different people a part of ARG, they would have done some, I guess, marketing reviews and you know, different research into TV ratings and everything. And, you know, obviously they've weighed up to say this $5 million per year for this deal is gonna have a net benefit in X amount, and maybe they'll hedging their bets to say, well, you know, people have either got a Stan account or a Netflix account, or they've got both. So let's go there and try and get a promotion through Stan that way, and seeing if people who are motorsport fans, if they've already got a Stan account and they like it, they might go get the sports subscription, or, you know, the people that are just the average viewers might stumble across it on a free trial or whatever Stan does on that aspect, and get people in that way to say, well, people have already got a Stan account, they might go and get that extra subscription.
In summary, it's a business model, and it needs to function as such. And I think the prospect of continuing to pay the amount of money it was to underwrite the Channel 7 coverage when you had the alternate deal on the table for a pretty similar audience level, I think that they prioritise that, and obviously looking to grow a partnership with Stan. And the fact that Stan have picked up, you know, they're investing in motorsport as a whole with the WRC, the WEC, IndyCar, and Formula E, I think there is potential to grow the subscriber base from there. So that's I think that's a positive. And obviously there is some growth potential there, but yeah, to have a mainstream media provider investing in the AAG category in the Speed Series, I think should not be looked at lightly.
In terms of the TV coverage itself on the broadcast, some of these were improved at Phillip Island compared to Simmons Plains, but some of the things I noted, like, do we need to see qualifying on these broadcasts? On the Simmons Plains broadcast, obviously we had, we were treated to an hour and a half odd of TCR S5000 and Trans Am qualifying. Did we need to see it? Because there were XL and Hyundai XL and HQ races on that weekend. I mean, I personally would have rather watched those two races than qualifying on the Saturday broadcast. What do you guys think? Now, at Phillip Island, that was improved upon, because we only saw on the Saturday, they only showed the TCR qualifying. And obviously we got like the Formula Ford races, the Radicals. But even in the coverage of the TCR qualifying, I mean, it was an hour or so into the broadcast before we saw a race.
Yeah, I think they're trying to, I reckon we'll probably over the year see a bit of both as well. As like, to one of your early points. So I think they're still trying to establish the drivers and, you know, the teams and things like that for the season. So, yeah, it's like, do we need to see qualifying all the time? Maybe not, but the other thing that I would say about consumer experiences these days that people seem to want more detail. Like, I mean, the amount of people that will bail up to watch a Formula One practice session is, you know, is increasing. So I think people almost like that part of the storytelling.
People are whinging now because Australia doesn't get coverage of Formula One testing.
Yeah, exactly. So I think
ridiculous.
I think that's, so there's probably a balance between the two. I don't think they need to show it at every single event, but I think you will see a bit of mixing and matching between it. And they're always going to promote those three or four top categories, whether it's S5000, TCR, TCM, Trans Ams, and obviously GT. So I think we will see they're prioritised at different stages, and you might get more in that.
Well, I guess, they're probably trying to, for part of it is set the story for them, trying to build up the story to go, he's qualifying. Since they do the, was it 10 minutes or 15 minutes, the first session, with, and then the final 10 do the hit out for the final 10 minutes for there. I guess they're trying to build it up into that. But, yeah, like, I haven't got a problem with it, you know. For me, you know, racing's racing. I want to watch as much as I can. So qualifying, you know, as long as the session's the right length where cars are out on track and pushing for times compared to, you know, having a 25-minute session where everyone sits in the garage to the last 5 minutes, well, there's no point really broadcasting that if that's the case. But you've always got cars out on track with what they've got set up at the moment, so I think it's fine, but that's just me because I want to watch every bit I can of it.
Well, that's humans planes, Adam. Would you have rather watched qualifying of those three Trans Am, S5000 and TCR categories, or would you have rather watched the Hyundai XL and HQ races that they had that morning?
Well, it would have been great to see HQs and XLs because they always do provide good one-make class racing in there, but I don't think it was ever on the horizon for them to be shown. So
No. But would you rather watch them or qualifying?
I would have loved to watch both.
You got to choose.
Got to choose one. Oh, racing's always racing if it's a good race, but if the races were strung out and it was pretty much like quali, well, you haven't really won then. But if it's a good close race, yeah, racing's always going to win over quali.
What do you think, Daniel?
That's a tough one. Probably the racing. But what I would say is that I think Stan is investing this money not in XLs and HQ Holmans. So I think that may dictate what we see in the future.
I picked this up from an internet forum commenting on the first round at Simmons, and it came up again at the Phillip Island race. The downtime between each of the races and basically all the fill that you get in between, basically running around trying to find people to interview in between races, and then you'll see the cars come out and we might follow the cars around on the siding lap before they grid up on the grid and so on and so forth. Should they have more sort of pre-prepared packages to show in between the races instead of just sort of running around trying to find anyone to interview?
I think what do you mean by pre-prepared?
Better job of that at Phillip Island. They had, you know, Greg Rust and Molly Taylor going around the local sites.
Yes, they did have that, yeah.
Which probably in there. But, yeah, there's probably something they could do. I guess it depends on what resources they got available, because compared to, say, like a Supercars or something where they got dedicated, you know, a production crew that are doing it, that the drivers and teams are more accessible, whereas a lot of the categories that are racing, they're a lot more if you're middle tier races where during the week or They're rocking in on bumpy and then getting stuck into the weekend. So there isn't too much time to pre-record sections with them and then get them packaged up ready for live TV for the amount there. There's probably room to grow there to grab people from it on say like a Friday or Thursday afternoon and do pieces with them. But I guess it depends on what resources they got available to do that.
Well, it's Supercars TV doing the broadcast, so I mean, they should have the availability to do that sort of stuff. But I was also thinking in terms of, couldn't Stan use breaks in between the races to sort of cross promote their IndyCars? Like, you know, recap the latest IndyCar race or the latest WEC race. You know, we hear about how TCR is an international touring car category. Well, why not give us some updates on WTCR? Just try and make the things in between races different and interesting. And
there's probably room to grow with that. Like, I think what probably threw a little bit of what happened on the weekend was the crash in Trans Am qualifying. Where there was that extended delay, and then so which then impacted the TCR session, which was on directly. Oh no, it was the sports dance were going out, and then it was TCR after the sports dance for it, and that had a flow on effect from there, where they had a large filler that needed to go from there. But yeah,
well, that's where your pre-prepared packages had come in handy. I mean, I get it's 2022, not 1992, but I mean, Mike Raymond, he'd have a lot of pre-prepared stuff for his telecasts, and if there was a delay or if they'd roll a story, and you know, there was always something different. If there was a hold up in the program, there was always something exciting to watch.
Well, I think we might see that develop over the course of it. I do agree that I think using or leveraging the international element of the TCR and drawing that connection, the same with the GT World or GT Challenge World Europe and those types of events. I think that's good. But I think at this early stage, they're trying to promote and build these personalities. So we are seeing a lot of the repetition of those interviews and different things. Phillip Island visits, Adam, that were broadcast on the weekend actually were sponsored by the Victorian government or the promoting the Phillip Island region, which initially I was skeptical about. I was like, why are we watching this when we could be, you know, watching some Formula Ford races or other things? But then when it turned out, they were actually investing money in the event. So that actually played well. But yeah, I think there is a balance to have some prepackaged international events and updates combined with trying to sell and develop the personalities in the paddock.
Onto the structure of the events, I'll start with the Speed Series name, which is new for this year. What do we think of that? I'll give an example. My partner, so She knows TCR. If there's a race on, I'll say TCR's on. She knows what that is. Say the S5000's on. Yep, know what that is. I said to her, "Oh, the Speed Series is on." First question is, "What's that?" And then it's like, "Well, oh, it's got the TCR and it's got the S5000." And does calling the package the Speed Series not add a bit of a layer of confusion, or another thing to explain to someone new?
Yep, I think so. Well, it's not an amalgamation, a connection of the Shannon's National Motor Racing Championship and then ARG coming in with their own categories and trying to differentiate themselves from there. So I think you've got essentially two different series in one, trying to be one, but calling each other, adding the element in for the ARG specific series and call themselves the Speed Series. Oh, I think it's, yeah, just makes it more confusing than it needs to be.
Well, I think it's works two ways. Yeah, because initially I was a bit surprised as well, because as you said, it's adding another layer. But as a broadcast name. Like, I understand they needed something to umbrella and promote the actual broadcast, because, you know, when one of the strengths of the product is that TCRS 5000, Trans Am, GT Challenge Australia are all strong individual categories. So how do you promote the you know, the whole show without, you know, prioritizing one category over another? So I understand the need for that. And Speed Series, I don't mind it as a name. So I think you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, in terms of there, by adding a new name, yeah, you add a level of complexity, but at least you've got that umbrella branding and identity, rather than it being kind of, you know, a smorgasbord of different names and branding, if you were to go by the individual categories. So the other option was just to call it the Shannon's Motor Racing Championships, but I suppose maybe that didn't go down well with your Super Cheap Auto Australia TCRs and your AWS GT Challenge World Australia. So tough one, but ultimately I think when push comes to shove, I don't think it really affects too much.
I think you need to pick one headline, personally. Well, I've thought that going back through the Shannon's Nationals. I thought that during the Pro Car Champ Series years, even back to the Power Tour. I think it's easier to have one headline act and then you've got your supports, rather than have an umbrella term. If you say, I'm going to the supercars this weekend, everyone knows what it is. So if you say, I'm going to the
supercars. You're going to watch the super ute, aren't you?
As a support act. But like if you say, I'm going to the sprint cars, when you go to the sprint cars, you'll see your support acts. I'm going to the Formula One. You know what you're going to see. It's easy to explain. Tell someone I'm going to the Speed Series. What's that? Well, it's TCR. It's like we've just been saying. In Pro Car, you said, I'm going to the Pro Car Series. Well, what's that? Well, it's Nations Cup and it's Utes. And I think you need to... Now, what one do you make your headline act? I don't know. I think you need to pick one.
Organically picked itself as TCR. If you look at how the events are structured, what's been the last race for round one and two on both days? It's been TCR has been the last race, and TCR has been pushed a bit more than S5000 in it there. So I think at this stage, TCR is probably their main act at the moment, and then everything else falls in behind it. But it is getting broadcast as everything's here for it. But I think organically, TCR has stood out to be their main category.
Yeah, I agree on that. I think it has. TCR is the strongest brand at the moment. However, it's not structured to be a headliner. So, like any category, AG hasn't set it up to have a headline category. So, like, I think you potentially undermine the other work and the way it's structured, all to have a branding or a lead brand for your series. Whilst there may be some value in that for simplicity, I don't think they're willing to undermine the structure that they've got and the way it's been set up just for a single branding name.
But if you did make, say, TCR the headline, the only one I can see it maybe affecting would be S5000. I mean, I can't see it affecting a Trans Am grid or really the GT grid. Do you think?
Well, no, but you don't know the category management right deals that they've sold. Like SRO might have gone in under the proviso that they're, you know, at least on equal billing. I know TCM, there was some, not issues, but there was some, some pretty vocal things from the competitor group that they felt like they weren't being treated as an equal share of the pie, even as things down to garages and stuff like that. So, and broadcast times and things like that. So I think it is a fine line, because the strength of the package is its diversity and the range of categories. So I think they're they would be very hesitant to upset that boat.
Well, I know there was a bit of a bone with some competitors at the 6 hour last year with some of the ARG categories where the garage allocations or where the marquees were put for some teams in there where the GT races had their 1 hour with pit stops and everything else, and they had all their pit equipment they needed for it, but they'll out back in marquees where there was obviously TCR which were running their sprint races, which didn't need garages, but they had garages for it. So I know some, alluding to your TCM thing where competitors weren't happy with where it's structured, there was a bit of that last year before the big long break.
So if you guys were fronting the Speed Series, Daniel, you'd keep it as sort of the joint headline at the moment?
Yeah, definitely.
What about you, Adam?
I'd probably push TCR. What about you, Luke?
I would go down the same path as you, Adam. I'd have a headline. I'd do away with the Speed Series name. I'd pick, and it could only really be TCR or S5000 as your headline act. Obviously, TCR's the more likely one, especially at the moment. You could take a punt on S5000 as the headline to create a very big point of difference between it and the Supercars Championship, because TCR, you'd be, although as we know, it's very different to Supercars, but it's in the same sort of realm. It'd be a bit hard to do it with S5000 with only 9 cars at the moment. Do you stack the back with F3s, old F3 cars?
Nah, I don't think you could.
Be a bad look, but at least it'd be a bigger grid. I mean, the Formula Holdens used to stack the back of the grid with F2 cars.
Yeah, I just think they're too different to be. Like, I can understand, you know, you got definitely a different class system in there for the cars, but I don't think it would be a good look. Like, if you purely look at numbers, if you just looked at, say, Natsoft and the results, and, you know, look there, yeah, it'll look good. Hey, look, there's a 20 car grid, but if you watch it, I just can't see it working too great or be a good look.
I think it'd look better than 9 cars. It's basically a class race within the series, or within the one race, which I don't mind. I'd like, in reality, I don't think you'll ever get those two groups together, but I can't see a lot of faults in it. Like, you'll just, at the end of it, we'll just crown an S5000 winner and a Formula 3 winner. You both get your trophy, but you both run in the same race. I think short term, I don't think it does too much damage to either of them. And it, yeah, fills out a grid. But yeah, I think the reality of that happening is pretty slim.
I guess one other thing I'd do, if I went the TCR route and made that my headline act, I got to say, the first thing I'd do with that, change the name of the TCR series. People don't know what a TCR car is. And even on the broadcast, they say the TCRs are up next. Now, the layman doesn't know what a TCR is. And given that TCR stands for Touring Car Racing, I think the current name, the Super Cheap Auto TCR Australia Series, I think that sounds a bit clunky. I'd be more inclined to just call, I think they should rename it the Super Cheap Auto Touring Car Series, because the term touring car is something, a name that people recognise, and automatically it says what it is. And I think it's a lot simpler and easier to explain than what a TCR car is.
Oh, I guess, yeah, it makes sense to the average punter with it, but I guess they're trying to jump onto the global platform, calling it TCR around the world and trying to use that as it, but I guess, yeah.
But the WTCR is called the World Touring Car Cup.
But everywhere it's branded, it's WTCR.
Well,
Everything that I've seen is always branded WTCR.
WTCR, but the actual name of the championship is the World Touring Car Cup. So WTCR is just the abbreviation. So, I mean, you can still abbreviate here as everyone is still know. You could educate people that their TCR cars is the name of the class. I just think if you called it super cheap auto touring car series, it'd just be, you wouldn't even have to explain it. That's just what it is.
I think it'd be fine, super cheap auto touring car series. But I agree with Adam's point. I think they've latched on to the TCR brand, at least internationally, is fairly well established. I think whatever way you went, I don't think it really will change or, you know, shift the dial too much.
The listeners are getting a view into what goes through my mind watching, when I'm sitting around watching these races, moving the Simmons Plain start line, renaming the TCR series. what do you guys think of the formats of all the categories? The general format of the races, there's sort of a, other than the GT cars, it's a pretty standard three race format.
I like the inverted format for S5000 and TCR with it. Like, it's not a full reverse grid race for TCR, the top 10, so that changes it up a little. Haven't seen too much carnage come out of it, like we've seen in other categories that have done reverse grid races previously. But yeah, I think it, outside of S5000 TCR, you've got your standard three race format for Trans Am, TCM with their trophy race added onto it as well. So I think they're all pretty good.
You know, formats, reverse grids, I'm always a little bit, I've never been a fan of, but on the weekend, it produced some decent enough racing, and I think it gave everyone a chance. So that wasn't the end of the world, but I wouldn't cry myself to sleep if we dropped that permanently from the TCR races. The hour GT races were really good, and obviously the relatively clean two races we had helped that. Yeah, I think the format overall is pretty good.
I think the three race format works really good for the Trans Ams and for TCR as well. I guess we just need, in many cases, we need to accept that motor racing is a bit like fast food these days. So, you know, the more races, the better in terms of TV. If they want races on Saturday and they want lots of races on Sunday, nowhere, unless it's sort of MotoGP, because even F1 has Saturday races now, but sort of gone are the days where you practiced on Friday, qualified Saturday, and then everyone raced on Sunday. Now it's racing almost all Saturday and all Sunday. There's almost too many races from the angle of, because there's every class seems to run three races, I think that's why we run into the time certain finishes, particularly at Simmons Plains, because there were so many races that obviously they got to keep getting on with the next one. So you've got all the time of gridding up and everything and winding down after a race, that I think that plays a part in why there's so many time certain finishes. If a class has 3 10 lappers compared to, say, 2 15 lappers, you'd have more time to finish a race if there were 2 15 lappers, because there's less time at the end of each race, if that makes sense.
But is that a byproduct of the TV slot that they've been given to cram everything into Stan? Like, because I think pretty certain after Simmons Plains, after the Stan coverage finished, I think there was some track time after it. Oh, not track time, but I think there was some free time after it. But I think it was fitting into that cutoff time.
But that they had the same format last year in Channel 7. They had the same format in 2019. I mean, most of the, from the mid-2000s, almost the standard format for any Australian class has been one race Saturday, two races Sunday sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, three races over a weekend. But I think if there's a lot of races, means there's more, if you have a yellow flag, there's harder cutoff times to get the next race in. But in terms of a general format, I think the three races work for Trans Am and TCR. I don't mind the reverse grid in the TCR, but I could do without it too. It doesn't matter. I think they should have a round winner overall for TCR. And I don't think the three race format works for S5000.
I think they one race Saturday, one race Sunday.
Yeah, or even, I mean, I can understand that contractually there probably needs to be a Saturday race, but maybe a short Saturday race and a longer race on the Sunday. I mean, I don't expect pit stops or anything. A tank of fuel sort of race on a Sunday with S5000, especially if, you know, going back to the previous topic, if I was going to make that my my feature category, a longer sort of race as the main event, I think that'd suit those cars perfectly.
Well, I guess if they can get the grid numbers up there, that might be a ploy or an avenue they could explore.
Yeah. I think the cars would suit longer races. And a few, I remember a few years ago in Auto Action, Mark Fogarty was, he put forward the idea that sort of the S5000 cars could have a longer race. And for instance, at Simmons Plains, their long race there would have been for the Tasmanian Grand Prix. And the race at Phillip Island would have been for the Victorian Grand Prix. And a race at Eastern Creek would be for the New South Wales Grand Prix, which I thought was a great idea. And I just think these cars would suit a longer race.
Well, especially how the tyre comes in. Like, it just seems the more laps they put on it, it seems to hold up pretty well through it.
Yeah, I wonder how many laps they could do. I wonder what the fuel one is, because... Well, once again, with 9 cars, you might be limited, but yeah.
Formula 3's in the back.
Yeah, but I wonder how long a tank of fuel would run for. Because, yeah, I agree. It's probably worth experimenting with the longer styled Grand Prix, even the old A1 Grand Prix. Maybe a format, shorter race on the Saturday and a longer race on the Sunday.
Well, even because at the moment, I know they trumpet the last S5000 races sort of the main event of the weekend, but I mean it's the same length as the other two, and it makes sort of the big podiums at the end of the week. I mean they have podiums for every race, but sort of they promote it as the main event podium of the weekend, and it's a bit confusing. But I've got any other general thoughts sort of on what we've seen so far, and what do you think heading into the next round, which supporting the Bathurst 6 hour at Bathurst in a couple of weeks? In terms of the TCR, I mean, those support races for the Repco 1000 last year were 3 cracking races for TCR at Bathurst. We got a tip?
Well, it depends what they do with the BOP changes, because I think they're due for Bathurst, I think. See how they balance out. But obviously, I want to see Brad Shields get up there, and it's his home race up at Bathurst. So I always seen him up in front in the Tilton Racing Hyundai. So that'll be pretty cool to see him up at the front. Or Jordan Cox, they're probably my 2 picks. Everyone's seen Jordan's YouTube sensation with the Honda Civic across the top for the supporting of the 12-hour, and his passes at Adelaide as well. The support races there, so you know he's not shy and having to go up there. So hopefully those two guys can have a good run.
His Peugeot looks really good too.
Yeah.
Blue and black Swift FX. That it's a really good looking car.
I think the Peugeot's just got a decent shape to it.
Yeah, well, I'll put a tip in. I'll say Jay Hansen will win race one because he's walked off with the opening races at the first two rounds. But I think Jordan Cox will be up there. Hopefully James Moffat can have a good run, because he was up there at the last round last year at Bathurst.
It would be good to see a Renault do some winning.
Yeah. So I'll go Moffat and Cox. What about you, Daniel?
I was going to say Jordan Cox, but I think we'll try and add some new flavour to it and go Dalberto in the Honda.
He will love that.
He's leading the championship, so
he's got
there. Aaron Cameron. I'd like Aaron Cameron to have a good weekend. He's had a shock in the first two rounds.
Well, especially how he finished up last year at Bathurst. He seemed to come on song with the Peugeot at the end of last year.
All right, so that'll about do us for this episode. Thank you to Breakthrough Health and Wellness for their continued support. Thanks to Daniel Adam for joining me. And a big hello to Brock, who will be listening to us on his leave. And we'll be back soon with another episode.